Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
Joining me on the line now to discuss this is Rohan Mukherjee, the Yale NUS College Assistant Professor of Political Science. Rohan, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us. And tell us where we're at right now. There's been a lot of confusion. There's been, of course, a lot of back and forth between New Delhi and Beijing about who started this and what happened. What do we think we know about this situation up in Ladakh, up in the Himalayas?
Sure. With regard to the immediate situation, which was the incident of June 15th, it's still very unclear what the actual incidents on the ground were. Both sides have opposing accounts. They both say that the other party crossed over what is called the line of actual control, which acts as a sort of de facto border between India and China in that region. The problem, though, is that both sides have conflicting accounts of what the line of actual control is. They've never agreed upon its demarcation on a map or its delineation. And so it's difficult to tell what's going on. Having said that, there is a sort of broader issue here, which, you know, takes us back a little bit to the early May when fist fights started breaking out between Indian and Chinese soldiers in the border areas. And that sort of, I think, has a lot to do with India's growing capabilities in the border area, where in the last 10 years, India has really built up a lot of infrastructure, which traditionally was fairly weak on the Indian side. Indian troops are now able to get much closer to the line of actual control in the way that India defines it. And I think that creates a bit of anxiety in China. And we've seen sort of reports of intrusions of Chinese troops from about May 21st, and it's really been building up since then. And now both sides have amassed troops on either side of the line of actual control.
How do they define that line? Is it a historical line? Or, I mean, one would think in these days of GPS satellites and the exactitude that those can give us that there could be an easy way to figure this out. I suppose none of this is easy, though, when it comes to politics.
Correct, yes. So I think both sides have an idea of their own version of the line of actual control. They just never agreed on a shared map.
That's
so
a problem.
They've exchanged maps, yeah. But they've never agreed.
Yeah. In this particular case, I had read that the Chinese side had put up some tents or something in an area that the Indians had claimed was theirs. Had you heard that, or do we know, and that was what sparked this most recent flashpoint last Monday?
That's correct. So there is this patrol point 14 in the Galwan Valley, which has sort of now become the flashpoint of this conflict, and alleged by the Indians that the Chinese put up a tent just across the line of actual control in that area. And so and this was in violation of a very recent field level agreement that they would not change the status quo while they were negotiating over the broader intrusions of Chinese troops. And so the Indians went to enforce that agreement and remove the tent, and then were ambushed by a very large number of PLA troops carrying clubs with barbed wire rolled around them and batons. So there is a longstanding agreement that neither side would use firearms on the border.
Ah.
And so both sides kept to that. So they carry firearms, but they keep them in a demobilized state. And so this was done with clubs and rocks and batons, and it was very barbaric. And 20 soldiers died. We don't know how many soldiers died on the Chinese side, but certainly in that terrain, at that altitude, at night, it's very likely that many Chinese soldiers died as well. We just won't know from the PLA what those figures are.
Yeah, it just sounds, you know, you use the word barbaric, and it sounds like something from the Middle Ages, you know, everything except a mace and spears or whatever being used in this hand-to-hand combat. And, you know, as we look at this ongoing, and this has been going on for how many decades? You could probably give us some background on that, but many decades. First of all, why is the exactitude of this particular line so important in an area that is so wild and rural and so far from everybody, you know, from everybody's centers of power?
Now, that's a great question. I mean, I think this goes back to the late 1950s when sort of conflicting maps emerged on both sides of that area. And historically, this is really for China all about strategic access to Tibet and Xinjiang, because mm-hmm. there's a major highway that runs through what is known as the Aksai Chin Plateau, which is a disputed region. It's very large. It's larger than the size of Taiwan. It's basically a high-altitude desert.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a major highway and lots of other construction that runs through that provides Chinese troops access. It connects Xinjiang and Tibet. And I think that, for China, is a no-go zone as far as India is concerned. And so while India builds up its infrastructure in the border regions, the Chinese are worried that India might start to push outward its understanding of the line of actual control. And eventually, it's impossible at this point. The PLA really has firm control over the entire battle. But I think the Chinese are trying to preempt even limited land grabs on the Indian side. And the way to do that is to grab the land yourself first. So that seems to be their strategy.
Yeah, possession is 9/10 of the law, huh? That sort of
exactly.
Mindset. We're speaking with Rohan Mukherjee, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Yale and U.S. College. Rohan, as we look at this strategic problem that has been between Beijing and Delhi for so many decades now, is there a third party, is there an honest broker that could emerge to help them solve this? And of course, we have to keep in mind that India is also in a conflict with Pakistan over another part of this area at the same time. So, but is there a third party that could logically step in and try to diffuse this situation?
It's tricky. President Donald Trump actually offered to do that in the midst of the conflict earlier in May, and both sides very quickly sort of without directly saying so, you know, politely declined that offer. Partly also because Donald Trump claimed to have had a phone call with Prime Minister Narendra Modi that never actually took place. So that was a bit strange, but the Indians had to deny that first and then say we're handling this bilaterally. And I think that on both sides is probably in their best interest, because when the U.S. gets involved with China, there are other larger geopolitical interests that come into play, and that might not be in the interest of either India or China to get enmeshed in this broader global competition when, as you say, these are territories that are very far from their centers of power, and it's easy to escalate things if you get someone like the U.S. involved. There may be other parties that are more disinterested, but at this point, I think both sides would prefer to keep the issue bilateral.
Yeah. So where do we go from here? You know, if it does stay a bilateral issue, I guess that's the question everyone's asking and has been, you know, for 50 years or more. But where does the issue go from here, and how, or does it just sort of hobble along as it's been hobbling along for quite some time?
Well, the last thing there was major buildup of this nature of troops in that region and along the line of actual control was around 1987. And at that point, it almost came to a crisis, and it took about 6 years of negotiations to demobilize both sides. So this could end up in that sort of stalemate, long-term stalemate, where both sides have to negotiate painstakingly which points they will vacate and at what times so that they can eventually reduce the risk of military conflict. Because war is going to hurt both sides tremendously. It's extremely costly to fight in that region because of the high altitude. We're talking thousands of meters. Soldiers need to be acclimatized. Equipment doesn't work properly. Both sides are mobilizing at the moment, of course, but you know, nothing can be sustained there for too long. So it's in their interest, again, to negotiate. But that negotiation process will take a while. And in the meantime, I think that the line of actual control will eventually become an area where both sides deploy more and more forces over time. So it's going to eat up their defense budgets, take away from other priorities of the government. And I think the India in particular will probably become closer aligned to the United States, as it has been doing for the last two decades, out of a fear of future Chinese encroachments and action against Indian interests.
Well, and let's talk about that defense, you know, posture. The Chinese have been ramping up their defense expenditures in recent years from what we've been able to tell. And India is certainly in an economic position right now where perhaps they are not able to ramp up quite as much as China. What does the economic equation look like here between those two countries trying to further militarize that zone?
That's a great question. I mean, it's no secret that China's defense budget has been growing by leaps and bounds and much faster than India's. So India has a resource constraint. India's defense budget is also largely spent on revenue expenditures, so salaries and pensions and things like that. There's very little room for capital expenses, such as buying new equipment. But I think that will change as things go forward. I think India will have to reorient fundamentally the way it thinks about its defense budget. China will have less difficult time, because they already have very deep pockets and they've been rationalizing their military by cutting personnel so that they save on salaries and pensions and can divert more resources to capital expenses. So there is an imbalance there, but it's not a difficult imbalance to redress.
Thanks for your insight on this. Rohan Mukherjee, the Yale NUS College Assistant Professor of Political Science.
Thank you so much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.